Sandra. Okay, we're ready to start when we have everyone's full attention. Okay, so John, can you ramp up the sound? And Brian? Okay, so Brian, for anyone who doesn't know, Brian's our archives director, and he has to leave this evening. So we scheduled, before the start of the business meeting, his report now. We scheduled it for 40 minutes, and we are behind schedule already. Brian, I'm just going to give you as much of that 40 minutes as you want to take. If we could wrap up before 5, that would help, because there'll be buses for us at 6, and we've got a little work to do after that. But go ahead.
All right. Hello, good afternoon, everybody who's here and who'll be wandering in. I'm Brian DeShays, the director of the Pacifica Radio Archives. And in this... this quarter, 6 months into the FY07, we really sort of took a look again at the archives' finances, our successes, our projects, our preservation, and the many things that we do. In the second quarter, we planned and successfully actualized the first major donor fundraising party for the archives that happened February 18th. And in your board packets, you'll find the Sound of Soul Adopt-A-Tape catalog. And what this is was created for the party, and I aggregated and did as much searching as I could on Black History tapes. There's 238 tapes from our 50,000 tape collection, as best as I could in my own little world come up with in terms of African American history and letters. So we took it to the event to our invited guests, and we offered them the opportunity to sponsor one of those tapes for $250, which would send the tape for formal preservation to Philadelphia, which will happen in June. With that, we raised $40,000 from this idea. Thank you. And also really sort of met new audiences, met people that really weren't necessarily aware of Pacifica and its history, and introduced them to the content of what we have. And up on the screen here we have LeVar Burton of public television fame and from the miniseries Roots, of course.
Well, the Pacifica Radio Archives is a treasure trove of historic documents that need to be preserved. This stuff needs to be digitized. We've learned in the film community that if we don't get to this treasured material before it disintegrates, we're losing, you know, American culture, valuable, priceless American culture. So this is a great idea. Adopt a piece of the historical record. It's a part of the American fabric. It's who we are. It makes a lot of sense.
Yay, LeVar Burton. So that sort of happened again, and online here on our website, we've put up maybe 7 or 8 different people, Brenda Russell, Steve Vai, Pamela Adlon, who's the voice of Bobby Hill on King of the Hill, and all of them really sort of found a tape in this catalog that they said, that's what I want to sponsor. Whether it's Brenda Russell, who adopted Carmen McRae, who basically taught her how to quit smoking, or taught her to quit smoking after her death. So in our website, we have video clips as well as the entire list of 56 tapes from that catalog that had been adopted for preservation, which will increase our understanding of our Black History Month or Black History tapes in the archives. So that's sort of like the fundraising party. I think that what we have are at least 125 new audience members that have been introduced to the archives that have given us their name and reputation to bounce off of. Let's see. This also made Billboard magazine an article in the March 17th issue, which also just sort of positively publicized the event and the archives. We began work this past quarter on the 4th grant award from the National Endowment for the Arts, which will be digitizing and preserving 30 tapes, updating our database, digitizing some of the folios that we had, making them optically character recognized. And we also just recently, last month, that was a mouthful, wasn't it? Thank you. Thank you. Yes, OCR. Thank you. And also we were just awarded from the Grammy Foundation the 3rd grant for preservation, which is $35,564, which is a 2-year project, which will preserve and digitize 300 tapes. and do some more sort of back-end work, creating a logo for the materials as well. So we're on our way starting in FY08 in October for the Grammy Foundation grant. What's interesting in the archives is that we do get a lot of people that come up to the archives that KPFK programmers bring up when they think it's appropriate. Cynthia McKinney visited us. Willie Nelson visited us while he was being interviewed. I went and I found from KPFT a 1973 concert that Willie Nelson gave, and we have the only recording. He autographed the box for us. We also had, Jackson Browne. Came up, and Jackson Browne is pretty much in the same game as we are. His recordings from way back are dying. It's on the same media. And he came up and took a tour, and he really cares. He really cares so much that he gave us his engineer, Ed Wong, who works at his studios to digitize and preserve. Ed Wong came over as an expert and really showed us how to work on our equipment, update and maintain those old reel-to-reel tapes, and helped us amplify our standards and practices on what we do. So they're there to help. He's like right next door in Santa Monica, and thanks to Jackson Browne and KPFK programmers for bringing those people up. They've really generated a lot of great generosity in a community that we hadn't previously been introduced to. I'm sorry? It's a concert with some old songs from the 20s, so we don't really know what it is. We have not transferred it yet, so we haven't heard it. When Ed Wong came in, that's the tape we wanted to work on, but things got out of the way and we didn't get to that tape yet. But once we do, it'd be interesting to find out how we can use it.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any questions about anything? Okay. We're continuing to do the From the Vault series and making available tapes for these stations. I feel like I'm talking to the people behind me. I don't know where we all are.
Brian, it might be best to stand right here. You can use my mic.
It's like working in the round. I never sort of got that. Yeah, no, it's all right. I'm all right. All right. Yeah, I'll get to that because that's why my board report is so thick. Most of it is
the.
Oh, he was asking about the Wisconsin State, the Wisconsin Historical Society, and our recent sort of re-establishing that relationship. In your board packets, there is the entire inventory and background of the relationship, including a 1968 national board policy that was passed. In other words, the national board in 1968 passed a motion that created a collections policy, which told the stations what kind of papers were to be collected, copied, and sent to Wisconsin for permanent placement. What's really scary? They asked for correspondence. In the old days before email, correspondence was actually collected and kept. An interesting venture. I wonder if we could actually get emails.
Was the National Board policy acted on?
It was, and that's why in 1968, or I think it was 1977 was when they finally got the group of inventory, which you see in your board packs, and they did another donation in 1987, which was the last time they did it. Since then, they've been trying to talk with various executive directors or somebody in the organization to reestablish it, but it hasn't been done. But you have the board policy, the motion. Probably my recommendation is indeed to formally reestablish connection with them and start the collections policy again and reestablish what we need to collect from 1987 to currently, what we need to donate to the Wisconsin Historical Society. But, all right, so does anybody have any questions about that before I go on to the other thing?
Well, yeah, I do.
All right, sure.
So when you say what we should collect, I remember you telling us once that there wasn't any sort of consistent policy about what we're currently producing as being archived, and I'm not even sure in the context of digital logging of content what archiving in the present context means. In other words, somebody sends you a show and it's in digital form, what does archiving of that content mean? And right now, is it just whoever sends you stuff from the stations that is what's possible to archive, or what's the status?
Yeah, the status is, you know, we collect national programming that's on the satellite, you know, national specials. We do take things that are donated or sent to us by programmers, particularly the people I can think of, Uprising we collect, This Way Out, which is on the satellite, we still collect. I just lost it. Anyway, some various ones. And then we do go to AudioPort and download various programs that we're aware of. And also KPFK, there's sort of like a pilot project going on with KPFK. We've hooked into their T1 line to where we record on a dedicated server 24/7 everything that's KPFK, not in the quality of streaming on the web, which is a lower quality, but we record it on the quality of the broadcast. So we have an archival higher bit rate. Thank you. Go technology. The higher bit rate for archival quality as opposed to web streaming quality or web stream. So we are doing various things, but I think the KPFK recording 24/7 puts all that stuff in a hard drive, and we just sort of replace the hard drive when it builds up. And I think one hard drive holds 3 months worth of programming. You know, then we can start looking at cherry picking and what we really want to archive, what we may want to transfer and make it onto those open source different formats that we've learned so much about. So does everybody did see your little inventory for the Wisconsin Historical Society? Actually, I was turning the page. The types of papers and manuscripts that the Wisconsin Historical Society has been collecting is correspondence, internal memoranda, reports, programming scripts, background notes, brochures, minutes of personnel meetings, tapes, samples of programming, the historical summaries, pamphlets, leaflets, legal business, legislative materials, lists of personnel, other things that you believe is appropriate. And actually in this book there is some correspondence and some updates on the timeline of the relationship. But I think, you know, at least there's somebody out there that has sort of that university academic relationship with what Pacifica has been from 1949 to 1987. At least in Wisconsin, if somebody goes to take a media class, they'll be able to access those materials. Anything? All right. So the next thing is what?
I've got boxes of memoranda from the whole fight years. Would that be something I could get
absolutely.
Rid of there?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank God.
Absolutely. Get rid of, clean out your garages. All right, so I just want to share quickly in terms of licensing and distribution. You know, the mission of the archives is to collect, describe, protect, and preserve the broadcast history of, you know, to, by, and for Pacifica for research and reference use. You know, the archives' mission really isn't in marketing, but distribution and making it available and accessible is in the mission. So licensing and distribution, I'm really happy that the task force is sort of moving that forward trepidatiously. Is that a good word? But I think in archiving, or what my argument has always been is attribution. What I find is that the common denominator in all these materials that we want to license and distribute openly is that they began on public radio, that they began on Pacifica Radio, and attribution is absolutely essential when we duplicate and put our archives and content somewhere else. And I think that this is probably the best example of, if I had my dream wish, this would be it. The Criterion Collection, which is one of my favorite DVD producing companies, they own all of Janus Films collection and reproduce at a very high quality. That's what I'm sort of passing around. There's a new Landmark box set series of 8 of Paul Robeson's films. And I cold called them. I just called the company and said, I think we have stuff that you should probably listen to. I think it's relevant to what you do. So I sent them this 1958 interview of Paul Robeson, and in the box set, if you notice, the title of the box itself is Citizen of the World, which is the title of the interview. And the two films that are on this DVD are his political films. The Proud Valley is him narrating the struggles of farm workers, I think. I didn't watch it yet. And Native Land is him in the Welsh mining in Wales, and has the music of him singing the Welsh labor songs. So this really talks about his political views, which is attached to the films. But if you look, it says Robeson on Pacifica Radio, 1958. Which means... Come on. Oh. No. There we go. So now we get to the next page, your special feature. All these audiences will look at Robeson on Pacifica Radio, 1958, and they would describe the interview. They mention Elsa Knight Thompson and Henry Winkler and Pacifica Radio and what the interview is about. The best thing I could have hoped for. Now, if I can dress, make my this do it.
Do we have anything to do with producing that set?
No. No, that's it's the Criterion game. So now we look at the interview itself, and they've actually tracked the interview in the audio, so you actually know what it is he's talking about. So they've almost done the academic thing of research and finding out what this interview is about, how it relates to Paul Robeson and his life. I think, and what we sort of got out of it, I did waive the licensing fees. I think I did. I might have gotten $90 out of them. But we did get like 25 free copies. But I think more importantly, identity, identity, identity. Attribution. All right, I can't. I think my finger's too sweaty and I can't make the thing work. But no, that's all right.
What are you trying to do?
There we go.
He's got ice water in his veins.
Oh, yes, of course. KPFA in Berkeley, 98.1. I really have a hard time with the numbers on all the five stations. 90.1. All right, so also in your board packs, you'll see a little CD that we passed out at the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. The archive was there, meeting and greeting our affiliate stations and the community of community radio. And what we gave to everybody was this... CD of an MP3 file of the Ballad of Pete Seeger, the program that you've heard about for a year because we've been working on it for a year. Tim Robbins and Pete Seeger, and we really have put months and months into re-editing that program for national broadcast, not just for the Archives Fund Drive. When you produce the program for fundraising, you sort of choose the bands and the points that are important that would raise the money. But what we really wanted to do was give Mr. Seeger his due and really put in all of our efforts. So we have two-time Peabody Award-winning Addie Gevins, radio producer, really volunteering and putting her efforts into really shepherding Mark Torres, a stellar producer at Pacifica for over 15 years, hundreds of programs behind him. But this is the best work he's ever done because he's had Addie, myself, and other supporters. And what is exciting, we're releasing it on April 30th for the network, is that Arlo Guthrie has agreed to narrate the program and re-narrate it. So we're recording Arlo Guthrie on April 23rd, narrating the program, and will be released with the material that's in the program comes from the archives. Most of it had never even been cataloged, much less preserved. So we didn't look in our database to look up Pete Seeger. We went into that refrigerator and started looking at boxes, box after box after box, and when we found something, well, we really did find some gold. Some amazing audio is in that program. All right. I think that, you know, the most serious challenge, aside of the exciting times in the archive and where I think the vision of the archives can go, is the sort of serious nature of its current funding. And, you know, the biggest challenges are the drop in CD sales. You know, there's probably four or five different reasons why. But 2 years ago, I think it was, we were at like $190,000 in sales. We're under $41,000 for this year projected. That comes from Democracy Now! And a lot of sales and a lot of access by the audience. So we really have gone from way up at 190, somehow down to 41. And what's happened is that the archive staff and myself have tried to pick up the slack. We keep doing fundraising and parties, and we're losing the time and resources to actually do the work. You know, I really haven't had time since traveling and going to conferences and doing what we do to go in that refrigerator, pull those tapes that were adopted, get them ready for Philadelphia, get our NEA tapes together ready for Philadelphia, and work on what I think is really the most exciting thing is the 1968 40th anniversary preservation project that we're embarking on, really sort of looking at repatriating tapes from legendary producers like Larry Josephson, Bob Fass, and really looking at what they have that should be in the archive. Maybe the Pacifica Board made some mistakes years gone by, but I think that we can correct them, because I think it's important for our American history and our culture to understand what 68 was about. And what we really did find, as we're starting this research, we predate NPR in 1968. We predate PBS in 68. We predate the public telling its own story. So those materials aren't just important to us as producers and programmers, but they're important to historians. They're important to scholars. They're important to the news media that's going to be trying to look back at 68 to find out what happened. They're going to be looking for content. So what we're trying to do is, you know, select a group of programs that are relevant to, you know, our 1968 history cheat sheet, and try to fit them in, and then really try to get consultants and experts to really start telling the story so we can produce public service announcements for not only Pacifica but the outside world, do some making some of the materials available for the license and distribution pilot project, the no-risk materials, the materials that really don't have copyright restrictions or issues, but it's what Pacifica did best. Grab a recorder, go out into the field and, you know, and record that protest. And that's what we have that I think is extraordinary. I think the next step is, you know, working with the Archives Committee and the National Office in really sort of moving some of that work done. Because right now, we're already about a month late in our timeline to get the 68 materials ready, shipped out, preserved, brought back, researched, and then made available for programming starting in 5 months, really.
Brian, does it make any sense to ask, put out a word around the network to ask? There may be people around the network who know of stuff that either is or should be in the refrigerator that might be relevant, or is it really a matter of you guys have to physically go through and if it's there, you'll see it, so knowing it's there doesn't really do anything for you if somebody tells you, hey, there should be a tape on?
Actually it does help. In fact, the last Archives Committee meeting that we had, which actually didn't meet quorum, which will be an issue, Archives Committee hasn't met quorum in a year. So I know we talked, Bob Letterer, at the last meeting, about making the committee a task force. And I said, well, let's give them one more shot. Let's try.
Well, that'll teach you.
Well, it didn't work. You know, we're still sitting there wasting everybody's time chatting, waiting for somebody to come on. And I need help. The archives needs help. The foundation needs help to make the archives work.
So, Don, and then Mary?
I think the only action in the
archives.
Oh, excuse me. God, we were broadcasting nationally here. I think the only action item in the Archives Committee report will be a motion to make the Archives Committee a task force, thereby not requiring quorum, and also making it a body where people participate because they're really interested in this project, as opposed to being assigned by their LSBs one of the committees that they have to populate. So I think this weekend we're going to try to change that.
I'm good. Thank you. I did lose my train of thought, though.
Well, I had asked you whether it helps putting out a question to people in the network who might know of things that should be there.
Yeah, particularly for 1968, as we embark on that, we did invite the people from the Archives Committee that were there. You know, we're welcome to anybody's recollections or memories or research. You know, if you find an event in 68 that you think we might have something in, please help lead me there to find it. Some exciting things, the 40th anniversary of the Los Angeles Century City Plaza protest riots is coming up June 23rd. And if anybody, Don White, you might remember this. It was a police riot. Muhammad Ali was there. And it was the very first Vietnam anti-war protest that ended in police brutality. It's what started police having to have their name badges on their shirt so that police, that people that were beaten can identify the person who beat them. The archives had, again, predating NPR, the archive has 15 hours of actuality and the hearings of the people that testified to say, well, I don't know which one beat me up, but they did it. We had a relationship with a documentarian who was on the cover of the Los Angeles Times. There was a picture of a baby in a baby carriage and a mother, you know, blocking police from beating her children. The kid in the baby carriage grew up and is now investigating what happened on that day. He's the one that came to me and said, do you know about this protest back 40 years ago? Do you have anything? And he'd already been collecting lots and lots of stuff, but what he found in our archive through his expert research is the fact that he could not get copies of the hearings. He couldn't hear what people said. And not only was it personally moving to see somebody really work with that material, but it's something that highlighted to me, like, wait a minute, we should be doing something about this. We should be commemorating not only the event, but Pacifica's place there. I don't know how much time I am, but I think I'm starting to get into the rambling stage.
We have about another 10 minutes, so why don't we have questions? Bertolt and then Chandra.
Two quick questions. First of all, concerning the time you spend trying to figure this out, and you don't have enough time to put together the 68 CDs, can you put out on the air at KPFK and KPFA, an announcement asking people to volunteer and to also come out and give you some specific information? So that would save you time. Would volunteer help you in that?
I think that there should be somebody in the archives to receive and be able to, that's the word. But I also think that, it takes, the station, the KPFA and KPFAK, to sort of work with me on what that actually means. When we do get volunteers, what do we really want them to do? Research? Do we want their input? But, yeah, volunteerism is really important in the archive. We don't have that much room. But, I think that particularly KPFK would be helpful because it's local and they already have been. We've gotten loads of volunteers that have been very loyal to us through KPFK. Volunteer coordinator Tony. We don't know his last name, Tony.
Our volunteer coordinator actually coordinates volunteers for the archive
right.
on a regular basis.
Yes, that's true. Let me say it on the mic. The KPFK volunteer coordinator, Tony, is very helpful and does coordinate volunteers for the archive.
Okay.
Thank you, Tony.
Yes. The next two quick questions. You mentioned the San Francisco Film Festival tapes.
Oh, yeah.
And you also mentioned the Kwame Nkrumah's speech at the United Nations. Can you talk a little bit about, how successful these two, documents are and how can we get access to them, copies?
All right, so the San Francisco Film Festival, or the San Francisco Film Society, this happened last April, a year ago, when the rainstorms in Berkeley really sort of looked at their basement storage space where tapes were, and I won't say it flooded it, but there was certainly enough moisture and mold and water to be of concern to the archives and the KPFA staff. So I think Vinny, who was there, and Bonnie Simmons, and then Susan Stone,
Addie Gevins,
Amelia Gonzalez, she remembers. She wasn't even there. So what we did is, we rescued a bunch of tapes. I'd say about 125, and I guess 50 of them about were from the San Francisco Film Festival, which KPFA and the San Francisco Film Festival has had a media sponsor relationship since the early 60s. And Eric Bowersfeld, the drama literature director, started recording them. So we had the only the festival didn't record it. They didn't have any copies of their stuff, but they lived over, over the water in KPFA. So we brought the tapes down, we restored them, and then I called the San Francisco Film Festival and said, you're going into your 50th anniversary this year. I think we have some stuff you might want to play with. And they they sent me photographs of the people that we had the interviews of, and we really did create a wonderful relationship. And what you'll find now is, let me see. All right, so from their 50th anniversary webpage, there we go. You can well, you can't read it, but 25 or 30 of those interviews are streamable and podcastable on the San Francisco Film Festival site for their 50th anniversary. And they've took the recordings back, and then they listened, and then they wrote the description of what it meant. So not only do we get academic connection with those people telling us what those really were, like Betty Davis and Bernardo Bertolucci and women in film, Shelley Winters, Betty Davis, Ruth Gordon, from the 70s, some amazing interviews that are of interest to the film community, not necessarily interesting to some other people, but that's what it is. But the relationship between the society and the archives now is stellar. We've got, down at the bottom of this page where all of this audio has been available, I think the credit with Lemlem and Sasha, we sort of came to the audio podcast or courtesy of the Pacifica Archives because we did all of the preservation work, and giving credit to KPFA as the original recording and broadcasting station, listener-sponsored radio with the call letters and the numbers. So I think it not only highlights the work of the archives and what we did, but also shows the relationship that goes back so far with KPFA. And I hope that KPFA is happy with that as well.
Chandra had a question.
The Kwame Nkrumah, I can't say it. The Kwame, I think Democracy Now! Requested a copy of it when they were going into the anniversary of Ghana. So we just got the material together, and then we distributed it through AudioPort to the entire network.
On that point, how does Democracy Now! Credit? You were talking about credit. When we give them something, how do you get?
Right. They usually are pretty good about it, but it's been years in training them, and to get the web link correct and up on the day of the broadcast instead of a week later. They've got a big job to do, a lot of people. So I think it's a positive that the Archives and Democracy Now! Still maintains a healthy relationship. In fact, I think Dave Rice, who's the archivist at Democracy Now!, is meeting me tomorrow in Scranton, Pennsylvania for the Mid-Atlantic Regional Archives Convention. And our presentation is about how radio fits with activism, how activism and social movements is sort of seen on radio. So I'll be excited to make that presentation to archivists and the people that really work with audio to say, what does radio mean to us as archivists?
Chandra, then we got Ray, and actually we only have about five more minutes.
I wanted to make a motion.
In addition to Democracy Now!, Kwame Nkrumah was our broadcast from KPFA.
Chandra?
I wanted to make a motion that the board adopt a tape to archive.
We're not we're not in session right now. Can do that tomorrow.
Okay.
I think it's a wonderful idea, Chandra. I think the Pacifica National Board should adopt a tape.
Do you have any tapes of board meetings? Ray. And then Ray and then Lisa.
Yeah, Brian, by the way, I'm looking at this document. This is great work. Now, this was produced with friends from the archives? You might have said that, but I apologize if you discussed that already.
Did we produce this catalog?
Yeah.
We did.
And you pay for the distribution?
We didn't distribute it. We just took it to the party.
I see. So this is... it was done in February, so it's pretty recent.
Yeah.
That looks like a great resource, material. I'm assuming that it deals with whole stories of the civil rights movement and beyond. So any school that was installed, any black study program would want to have something from that.
Right. What we did with the party, and also the catalog is online, to where you can see not only the tapes that people like Steve Vai and Lily Tomlin. Lily Tomlin and Jane Wagner adopted 20 tapes and donated $5,000 to the archives. And that comes from a very long relationship with Lily Tomlin and Jane Wagner, who have been on our advisory panel for our very first NEA panel to really look at our tapes. So thank you, Lily and Jane.
Do you have a way of compiling all interested parties or potential and contact them so they know this exists?
Right. Yeah, so in other words, you mean the people that came to our party?
No, beyond. I mean, any place.
So the catalog.
The 50 states.
Yeah, the tapes to be adopted from that catalog are online. The next step now is to start sending those catalogs out to our mailing list.
Yeah.
To start contacting people and making sure that they know. But also at the party, in addition to just adopting the tape, we offered the opportunity for each person who adopted to give more money for us to duplicate that CD with their name on it, preserved by Pamela Adlon, and then donate that tape to institutions of learning. If I want to give an extra $1,000, I can get the archives to take that CD, duplicate it, and send it to my high school, my college, my son's high school, you know, the people out in the middle of nowhere that don't know what Pacifica is. So we really are trying to make that not just adopt a tape, preserve it, and stick it back in the shelf, but to really sort of expand that mission. Lisa, I do want to talk about Kurt Vonnegut and who we put on the audio port over the last 6 months: Molly Ivins, Tilly Olson, Henry Miller, and Kurt Vonnegut. You know, the archive staff is so adept at what we've been able to learn over the past 5 years. Kurt Vonnegut passed away. I heard it in the morning. Called Mark Torres. He grabbed all the tapes, preserved it. Actually, one of them was preserved through the National Endowment for the Arts grant anyway. But we found two extraordinary tapes of Vonnegut in 1970 being interviewed. And that material was distributed, and I think there were 14 affiliate stations that downloaded the raw material. And the From the Vault episode that was produced in 2 days using the same materials was released. And 10 affiliate stations have taken the From the Vault Hour episode about Kurt Vonnegut. That 1970 predates NPR.
Brian, is it your policy to send copies to the families?
I wouldn't say it's policy, but if I knew the family or had an address, I would be more than happy to do so.
Lisa.
I agree with Ray that that's really great, and I always enjoy seeing your presentations because you always offer something that's so fun and exciting. You may have addressed this point before, and if you did, I apologize, but I just want to know a little bit more about it now. I would assume that the various stations probably also have archives or things in their vault, so to speak. What kind of work, is there anything being done to work with those stations too, to find out something that they might also have that maybe you're not aware of? And if you could just talk about that a little bit, please.
That's a really hard nut to crack, frankly. I visited WBAI recently. You know, KPFK, we have this relationship because we're there anyway, but there's still an archive downstairs that, you know, we've recently, I guess in the past 6 months, we've gone down and helped clean out their archive to build some more office space. We took a big chunk of them and put them in storage. WBAI has tapes that they're trying to work on, to transfer. Yet they don't have the expertise and they don't have the equipment. And yet, even though as much as we want to help, we can't fly to New York to do that. And I can't really, well, I do want to beg them to send me the tapes and let us do it. But I understand how they may feel about it, or how the original producers may feel about their tape. But I think the positive thing is that everything we've done and everything we've learned about the technical part of preserving tape and transferring it is online. We have a section from our front page called Technical Reports, and if they go there, you know, there's best standards and practices for audio preservation, for digitization, for cataloging. We're embarking with CPB Corps, the metadata on how public radio describes its material. Very, very important to archiving and cataloging. You know, you kind of won't notice yet, but, you know, in 50 years, when you try to look for 1978, 68 stuff, you'll find it.
Some of this stuff is stuff that's just going to have to take place on the task force because we're out of time. AC had his hand up, so that'll be the last comment. And then anybody else, if you have the interest, be there at those task force meetings. AC?
Yeah.
Let me explain why we can't, because we have to be on a bus to go to the Smithsonian in about 45 minutes. We must have half an hour of public comment today, and therefore that only leaves us 15 minutes to approve our agenda.
And I appreciate changing the agenda so that I could, you know, appear before you, and then I can go to Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, WPFW has held, with your corporation, at least 5 years of programming on Paul Robeson, and some on the boys, and we just played part of this tape from yours, and we've had people like his granddaughter and his Paul Robeson's granddaughter and son, and we've had expert scholars on Paul Robeson. Several scholars from I think Stanford and other places on his life and legacy, and we just completed one the other day. Who do we send that to? You, and then people around the network can send for some of those? Or
I mean, that really isn't the land of distribution. And even though the archive does have the privilege to distribute its material, I don't think that we're the entity any longer of taking local programming and then bicycling it. Is what used to, that's why there's multiple tapes. Tapes used to be the archive's job to duplicate, and then we would bicycle them around the network, was pre-affiliation stations way back in the 60s. And that's how tapes happen. But now I don't think that's the role of the archives. I think that's the role of the affiliate program, and I think that's the role of technology and the distribution of the network. So I think that the archive, you know, we used to sort of have live in two worlds, but I think the success that Ursula and Pete have done with the affiliate program and national programming, frankly, you know, and Nathan, now they're set up. You know, the archives can now do archiving.
Okay.
So glad to help, but I think they're the ones you want to talk to about how to really work on those materials.
Okay, and with that, we're going to have to wrap up. Thank you, Brian, and we're going to...
Thank you very much, everybody.
And just to remind people, so we're probably going to take action tomorrow to turn that committee into a task force. And if this interest that showed here could express itself on those task force meetings, that would be a great thing.